We can commence. Thank you. Well, first of all, welcome to this meeting of the Inner West Local Planning Panel. I'm David Lloyd. I am chairing this meeting, and in accordance with the Council's usual practice, wherever public meetings are held in the Council's area, it is appropriate on behalf of the Council to acknowledge the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation, the country we are meeting today, their elders past and present. For the information of the public, it is appropriate that the panel members introduce ourselves. As I said, I'm David Lloyd. I am a practicing lawyer and a QC. I am a former judge of the Land and Environment Court, a former acting judge of the Supreme Court, and currently a professor of law. Ms. Morrell.
Thank you, Chair. Jan Morrell. I've been a town planner for some 40-odd years. My last full-time position was Commissioner of the Land and Environment Court for 14 years. And post that, I sit on a number of local planning panels and chair some as well, and also I sit on the state panel. Thank you.
Ms. Day.
Oh, good afternoon. I'm a consultant town planner. I've got qualifications in geography, natural resource management, and town and country planning. I've been in practice a little less than Jan. I currently have a mix of local government contracts, private clients, and I'm on this and two other panels. Thank you.
And Mr. Hawke.
Thanks, Chair. My name's Ken Hawke, and I've lived in the Inner West. I'm the community representative on the panel. I've lived in the Inner West since 1974, and I have a career in local government planning, mainly in the inner city. And before retirement, I was the Director of Planning and Environmental Services at Marrickville Council.
Thank you for that. Next item on the agenda is declarations of interest, and there are none. So with that, we can move on to the agenda. Item one is a standing item, and namely a report to the panel on pending applications, which the panel has dealt with, and that report is noted. Next is item two on the agenda. This is the proposed development at 194 Marion Street, Leichhardt. This has been recommended for refusal on various grounds. Notwithstanding that, we have noticed that Linda Pellew, I think, do we have Linda Pellew on the line who wishes to address the panel as an objector?
Yes, hello there. My name's Linda Pellew. I live at 186 Marion Street. Been a resident here for over 20 years.
Well, before you proceed, you've heard what I've just said. The recommendation is to refuse on various grounds. The panel is prepared to adopt that recommendation and refuse this application on those stated grounds. Do you wish to change our mind or?
No, sorry, I just thought I'd have a voice, and I totally support where council is coming from, where the panel is coming from. It would simply be an eyesore in terms of the size of the site, in addition to the acoustic and physical privacy issues that I've raised in the objection letter. But no, I was very pleased to read that at this stage anyway, a refusal has been proposed for the development.
All right. Well, in that case, the decision of the panel is to adopt the recommendation and refuse the application on the various grounds set out in the assessment report. And thank you for your interest.
Thank you.
All right. So we can move on to item number three. This is the modification of an approved development at 95 Grove Street, Birch Grove. We have a number of people who wish to speak on that matter. I should advise that there are certain things that need to be said at the outset. First of all, the protocol which governs these meetings allows members of the public to address the panel for up to 3 minutes. And that is a rule which we generally strictly enforce, noting, however, that we do have all the written submissions. The second thing to note is that this is just a modification of an approved development, and we are only concerned with the proposed modification, not with the original development as approved. With that can't be revisited. So all we are interested in and all we can consider here are the particular modifications that are now proposed. With that in mind, I now invite those who have registered to speak to do so. First person on my list is Craig Harkins. Is Craig Harkins there, please?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. You have 3 minutes starting now.
Thank you. I'm Craig Harkins. I'm the project engineer for Hall Group & Co. as the builder on this project. I'd just like to clarify point O in the development application first, which is the sandstone cladding works. It was determined that the panel had decided, or the town planner decided, that they didn't want us to carry out any works on this sandstone cladding because there was damage to the facade. We've had an engineer come out to site, and he has deemed that it's because the property is constructed on top of a rock shelf. So what he proposes is that we actually remove the existing ashlar cladding and then investigate to ensure that the water seepage is coming from the rock shelf. And he's prepared to write a methodology to that sequence of works. So essentially, we would like to request approval to carry out repair works to the front facade of the property. And the second thing I would like to discuss is the engineer has also been out to site and deemed there be a requirement for two retaining walls along the boundary line. It's his advice that the walls are sort of constructed immediately. Now, they aren't in the original development consent. However, upon excavation on site, has been deemed necessary by the structural engineer that these two retaining walls are in fact constructed. We are of the opinion that it's beneficial to all parties involved to have these retaining walls constructed. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Any questions from the panel?
No.
No, thank you for that. And the next person on my list is Mr. Jansen. I thought I saw Mr. Jansen's name somewhere. And I think Mr. Jansen...
Can you hear me now, Mr. Chairman? Can you hear me now?
I can hear and see you. You have the floor.
I apologise for my Ludditeness.
That's all right.
I'm new to this.
You have the floor. Proceed.
Thank you. Just before I commence, Mr. Chairman, I was wondering if the panel's aware that apparently there has been a bit of a glitch in the service of the notice of the meeting that I've become aware of anecdotally. And some people, objectors, haven't received the notice. Some have. I've got no explanation for this. I've discussed it with the executive assistant, who, to her knowledge, all the notices went out. I don't seek to take the matter any further than that, just to let you know, panel, that circumstance apparently exists.
But you received the notice?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. And for my part, I can say that even though there was no requirement as such for service on my part of my written submissions, I hand-delivered a copy of our submissions to Mrs. Qureshi 4 p.m. yesterday and had a conversation with her. And she confirmed, as the both of us were aware, that they had only become aware of the meeting on the 4th of November when we told them that it was on. So I don't seek to do anything with that information other than put it before the panel.
Well, we're here now, and
yes,
you might note that we do have your 4-page written submission.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
All right. Your 3 minutes now.
Thank you. So I'm Brett Jansen. I'll be speaking on behalf of Mourner Lynch. We're the owners and residents of 93 Grove Street, Birchgrove, the adjacent property on the southern boundary to 95 Grove Street. We rely on our written submissions. For the past 23 years, my wife and I have enjoyed the sunlight to our home's living room and adjacent patio and garden. This includes the short time the areas received little but some early morning sunlight on the winter solstice as described in the winter in the written submissions. The first consent
interrupt you briefly, Mr. Jansen, and yes, I apologise for this. You seem to be addressing the original consent. We are not really...
Not at all.
The modifications. That's all.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can say that I am leading into that. The preliminary points lead into the point that I want to make, which, to be clear on it, addresses the current modification, the item that seeks changes to 7L.
Okay, proceed.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first consent was determined by delegation to staff, would have had the indisputable effect of removing the sunlight from those areas, not only on the winter solstice, but for many weeks prior to and after it. The assessment report to the subsequent modification application records the proposal complies with the solar access requirements to the adjoining private open space and living room window. We were bewildered and strongly disagreed with the rationale for this finding of compliance, because although the report had used the applicant's architect's drawing of our northern elevation of our home showing the lounge room window, it was altered by the assessor to describe it as the living room window. This was obviously the rationale used to support the finding of compliance in the first consent. For the past 23 years, not only do we consider this room as the lounge room, mainly used at night, but also the applicant's architect's plans show our living room as the room we considered it to be, and I'm sitting in it as we speak. In any event, the independent planning panel added condition 7L to ameliorate our solar access, which the consent had removed. The current development assessment report states that condition 7L has resulted in a difference of interpretation. With respect, this is at least disingenuous. The only difference of interpretation is that it is at odds with the recommendation by the assessor, despite the council adding it to its consent following the determination of the planning panel. The assessor thereafter, despite the consent saying otherwise, has advised the applicants, their builder and the private certifying authority that the planning panel had not intended to add condition 7L, and further that the council's consent document was in error. We've been advised that the private certifying authority issued the construction certificate and the parties have commenced work based relevantly on this advice. We are not aware of any request for clarification being sought by the council from the independent planning panel prior to the issuance of their consent.
Excuse me, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
Mr. Jansen, that's your 3 minutes, but because I've been interrupting you, please... You can have another one.
I'm indebted, Mr. Chairman. Can I just say I've got a quarter of a page to go. I'm just about there.
Yep, go ahead.
Thank you for your indulgence. As is noted in our written submissions, Annexure A's chronology, it wasn't until the 1st of October 2021, 8 months after the consent was issued, that the current modification was lodged seeking changes to 7L, and in doing so, by implication, conceding that they had been misinformed by the assessor. When we became aware of the assessor's interpretation and advice, this provoked us to seek determination of the issue in the Land and Environment Court in order to preserve our sunlight. The question in our case is whether the sunlight to our home and outdoor living area, which is secured by Condition 7L, should be removed by the changes sought in this modification. We ask that the panel maintain the status quo of Condition 7L. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, panel.
All right, before you go, I'll ask the panel if they have any questions. Panel?
No.
No questions? All right, we understand that. The next people on my list are Chris and Maureen Qureshi.
Yes, I'm here. I'll be representing both of us. This is Maureen Qureshi, and I'm a co-owner of the house with my husband, Chris Qureshi.
Yes, proceed.
Now, Mr. Chair, we have approval to construct a two-story extension to the rear of the existing house. The original development application was approved 8th of April. A modification application was subsequently lodged, which is what I think has brought these problems. In the plan submitted, the setback of the further extension from the boundary was 6 or 9 millimeters. The modification application was considered by the panel on 2nd February. At the panel meeting, the chair made it very clear that the panel was only considering consent for the further extension. The original approved two-story development was not under reconsideration. It is not for reconsideration now, and thank you for pointing that out, Chair. There is no need for new drawings or material in support of the original approved two-story development. We understand Condition 7L to require a 900 millimeter setback from the boundary with 95 Grove Street. We amended the plans, to the further single story extension only. We amended the plans to reflect a 900 millimeter setback for a single story extension. We did not change the footprint of the original extension because that was already approved. Our certifier issued a construction certificate certifying that the modified plans comply with Condition 7L. While my husband and I and the certifier understand the Condition 7L only relates to the further single-story extension, Mr. Jansen thinks that Condition 7L relates to the entire wall along the boundary with his property. In other words, that the Condition 7L affects that part of the southern wall which had already been approved. At the time we submitted the request to council to clarify the wording of Condition 7L, it did not occur to us that Condition 7L has in fact been satisfied by the amended and approved plans. Condition 7L is therefore unnecessary as we see it, and we ask that it be deleted. In the alternative, we accept the assessor's suggested rewording of Condition 7L and request that an additional sentence be included indicating that it only relates to the further single story extension. We also request a change in the word increase to 900 to maintain to 900 as our plans have already complied with this condition. We submit that the plans approved by council on 8th April 2020 are not open for reconsideration. Thank you, Chair.
Any questions by the panel?
No.
Ms. Morrell, any questions?
No.
No questions. Thank you. Mr. Edward Serafian, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and panel members. My name is Edward. I've been involved in this project as the building designer.
Yes.
And represent the owners and applicants, Chris and Maureen Qureshi. I would like to say that we agree with council's decision and recommendation, and think it is both fair and reasonable, and only have a couple of points that I would like to raise in the hopes that it'll be considered by the panel with a favourable outcome. If I may just share my screen, this is the submission that I had submitted with my request to speak.
We have received this document.
Yes, so the first point that I would like to raise is in regards to the planter in the front of the property, condition 7Q. I just wanted to clarify that the height of this planter is not to be above the height of the adjacent brick facade wall, either to the street frontage or to the neighbouring 93 Grove Street. The finish of this planter is not critical, as it will always be concealed, and this was always the intention. Any planting or trees, as can be seen from the size of this planter, it's not possible to grow to a size that could cause any obstruction to neighbouring properties. If anything, it will just provide extra landscaping and relief to the facade. Secondly, in relation to condition 7S, I would ask the panel to reconsider the necessity to include this condition to remove references to made good. As can be seen from these snapshots of the plans on architectural, the only instance is in regards to the sandstone wall on the facade, which was previously approved to be repaired and made good. And on landscape plans, it was in regards to a rear retaining wall. And none of these inclusions to be made good is in any way removing any heritage items. If anything, it's just restoring it back to its former glory. And lastly, I would like to speak regarding the rear deck. So as the assessment report note, there was a requirement from the previous application that required all external areas to be 150 mil below internal areas for stormwater waterproofing reasons. We have complied with that, and in order for that to occur, that rear deck and the rear retaining wall would have to increase to be built from boundary to boundary, being the 93 Grove Street boundary and the Wharf Street side boundary. In what?
Excuse me, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
Yes.
You just wrap up, please.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So from this section, we can see that there may be a requirement for a retaining wall. This, however, was not explicitly noted in the plans due to the survey showing an existing stone wall and the conditions of that stone wall, the height and how far into the ground that was, and the necessity of a retaining wall on that boundary was not very clear. Further to following the application, there was and further site investigation from builders and engineers, it has been determined that a retaining wall will be required, and in order to negate further delays on site and more of council's attention and time and possibly even damage to the neighbouring properties, we would just ask that a condition be included in the consent to allow for any required retaining walls as part of the approved plans. Thank you, Mr. Chair. These are my comments.
Any questions by the panel?
No, I'm fine.
Just one question. Are you saying that the retaining wall isn't in the current plans, but you're wanting a condition?
So it's not explicitly noted in the plans for retaining wall, as I mentioned, is because it wasn't clear whether it would be needed, but in order for the external deck, it needed to be below the neighbouring properties. And I was advised by our certifier and also the council that a retaining wall on the boundary would require an additional DA. And as I'd mentioned, in order to continuing the delays on site, which I understand is a concern for neighbours as well, not for the construction to not be prolonged, as well as the time and attention of council to go through and provide another consent for retaining wall that is required for the approved
plan. Now, is this on the boundary?
Yes.
Correct. Have you discussed it with the neighbour, whose boundary it's on?
I believe that our construction manager, Craig Harkins, he will be able to provide more comment on that. But by saying on the boundary, it will be on the 95 Grove Street side. It will not at all encroach into any other properties. It will always be maintained within the 95 Grove Street property boundaries.
Can you give us some idea of quantifying how high it would be, how wide it would be?
I'm not too familiar with the on-site conditions.
I might be able to help a little bit better with that, if I may.
Yes, Craig.
The thickness of the wall would, as proposed by the engineer, to be 190 millimetres. The wall would be located, as Ed mentioned, on the property of 95 Grove Street. The reason for the retaining wall was that excavations were carried out on site, and that in order to stop subsidence from Mr. Janssen's side, the engineer proposed to install the retaining wall along that boundary. It looks to be about 10 metres in length and 190 millimetres wide.
And how high?
1.1 metres from the ground level.
And is that 1.1 metres above the ground on number 93?
On number 95.
So what is it for 93?
Essentially, it's still below there. Their garden level, so it wouldn't be seen as such from that side. It's just simply to retain their soil.
And currently, there is no plan available for this wall.
Sorry, the engineer has essentially just given us dimensions at this stage as to what would be required. There's no drawings as such. The reason that this sort of came around is we received a letter from, I think, Mr. Janssen's solicitor to say that they were concerned that there may be subsidence from Mr. Janssen's property to 95 Grove Street. At the time, we obviously consulted our engineer and he proposed that we install this retaining wall. And we believe that it's beneficial to all parties involved. I would be surprised if there was any objections at the simple fact is that we're trying to retain the soil between the two properties, or from Mr. Janssen's property to collapsing into Mr. and Mrs. Creshy's property.
Well, first of all, my question is a development consent required for this retaining wall, or is it something that can be constructed without development consent? It's very hard for the panel to include a condition where it hasn't even got a plan for and it's not part of the modification application, as you can appreciate.
Can I comment, panel?
No. We're still asking questions of the applicant. We'll ask you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You later. I have to say, this application for modification does not include a retaining wall. We do not have any plans of the retaining wall or any engineering details on the retaining wall, and it's not something that I think we can blindly approve by way of a condition without seeing precisely how it's to be constructed and where. That's the problem I have with it. And I I don't think it can be dealt with by way of a condition. I think you'll have to come, you'll have to produce a plan of the retaining wall and perhaps make a further application for modification to include the retaining wall. That's
when it's been confirmed that development consent is required for a retaining wall of those dimensions.
If it's a structural engineering thing, then the answer to that question is yes, it needs consent. Yeah. We've been addressed about the advice of the structural engineer who requires it. Mm. So my view is that we cannot include this as a condition. It's approving something that we haven't seen. We haven't seen the design details of it. We don't know where it's going, and it's not something that we can do here. If it's required, then you need to produce plans of it and lodge it by way of a further modification application. That is my view. It's only my view. It's not necessarily the views of the panel. So I well have a different view.
Mr. Chair, would I be able to say something?
Yes.
We actually have all the diagrams prepared. The engineer has already provided the diagrams, and we are happy to pass those through to you if it would be of any help.
But we don't have them before us.
All right.
We don't have them. We don't have them at all. And as I said, they do not form part of this modification application. That's our difficulty.
If I may speak, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I suppose the intention of this is similar to the previous application modification of the DA. A condition was provided that we need to be 150 millimetres below the internal floor. Now, in order for that to be satisfied, we needed to extend the deck. And this is a similar case. In order for us to extend the deck, that would alter the plans, and we needed to lodge a separate application. In fairness, there were other things that we were seeking to adjust, so it wasn't too much of an issue. But in this instance, in order to be able to construct the approved plans, similarly, if there's any structural elements in the building that would be required to construct the building as the stamp plans are drawn, it would require we would just need to provide that, and in order to avoid having to lodge another application to construct something that has already been approved, I suppose that was the intention, to not have to fall into the same predicament as the previous application, which provided us the conditions that we then needed to lodge a separate application in order to satisfy.
Well, this is,
and I guess why weren't the plans, including the retaining wall, provided as part of the modification in the first place?
Like I said, there was a stone wall along that boundary, which it wasn't very clear until more site investigation was performed to see what the condition of that wall was. It's very possible that wall was acting as a retaining wall, and therefore no additional retaining structure was required. But it, unfortunately, just due to timing, that wasn't clear until after the application was submitted.
All right, thanks for that advice. Any other questions, panel?
No, thanks.
This is obviously something that we will have to consider. You've heard my view, the panel may not go along with it, but it's something that we will have to consider. We note your request, however, that you want a condition to be included in the approval providing consent to construct a retaining wall. That is the question we will have to answer. We may or may not go along with that request. If we don't go along with it, then you will have to lodge the engineering details for the retaining wall that you propose, and it will have to be the subject of a further application for modification separately to what we have before us. All right.
Thank you.
We appreciate you considering it, Mr. Chair.
And now,
Excuse me, Chair. Sorry, as we have Mr. Jansen here, would it be possible to have him to comment on? I think he wanted to have something to say in response. And as he is here, and we will be considering it, it might be a good idea to have what his views on board about the retaining.
Mr. Jansen.
Thank you, panel. What has transpired is that there, in fact, was a part retaining wall that went that had been there for as long as the house has been there, about 90 years, doing its job. There has been excavations carried out which exceeded the approved consent. That has provoked a cease work order by the certifying authority. I assume until consent is obtained. So at the moment, we have what is there at the moment? There is excavation that has been carried out for, as Ms. Harkin says, approximately 10 metres, with a half more, three quarters of the backyard. There is still the old retaining wall in situ, which is there. What else can I... The other point that I would make in or comment on in relation to what Mr. Harkin said, I've been given... the engineering plans, which, in fact, there are two drawings that I've seen for consideration by the applicants. I don't have them in front of me, of course, but there were two. There was one that I, from memory, was 110 mil high, but there was also another one that was, from memory, 1600 mil high. So that's for someone else's consideration.
Thank you very much.
I've raised that. I'm sorry?
Mr. Jansen, we have not seen these engineering plans.
No, indeed.
What we've asked for is for the applicant to produce them to the panel by way of a further modification application so that we can consider them.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I make no further comment on as to the retaining walls. I mean, it's with respect in your hands.
All right. Well, then, with that, we can conclude this particular item. The panel will consider what's been put to us and publish our determination in due course. And we thank you all for your input.
Thank you, panel.
With that, we can move on to item number 4. This is the proposed development at 35 Waterview Street, Balmain, recommended for approval with conditions. Two speakers registered to speak. Firstly, Mr. Stevenson. Is Mr. Stevenson yes. there?
Excuse me. Yes, I am. Thank you, Chairman.
Yeah, proceed.
Okay. we live next door at number 33.
Yes.
We built a house here in 1998, so we're familiar with the processes of approval and also the issues that relate to site constraints of 35. We're probably the most affected neighbour, given that we're on the southwest side of the property. We designed this house based on principles of contextual design and sustainability, and they are really important issues for us in terms of the progress of this development. Okay, if I get into there's a bunch of issues. Overshadowing is probably the major one. We have a living room at the rear of our property. When we designed it, we provided a setback of 1,250 millimetres from the boundary on the northeast facade. That's all to capture winter sun and capture northeast breezes. So that's part of the sustainability story. It's really important to us. So that allows, based on that, it allows us to have really significant sun penetration into our living room. I have sent, and I hope you have these with you, there's a photo. Can you confirm that you have those with you?
Yes, you've supplied those, I think.
Yeah, have you got those?
Yep. Yes.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. And there's also a sectional diagram.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. So basically that northeast facade is 4 metres long. It's a glazed facade. It provides about 3.5 hours of sunlight up to from 9 to about 12:30. Really works well. We've enjoyed it for the last 20 years. So I guess the issue for me is I don't want to see that diminished. You know, it's really important for us to know that there's a complying development next door regarding compliance with the DCP. We realised that the property next door would get redeveloped and at some stage we anticipated that that would be a complying development and therefore retain our solar access. So when I've assessed the shadow diagrams that have been done, they're hand-drawn. What transpires out of that is that there's a length of about 1 metre is preserved for compliance of the 2 hours. And that's between 10 and 12. So by 12 o'clock, the sun has disappeared off our facade. That means there's about a 75% reduction in the compliance with the DCP in terms of maintaining the solar access. I mean, you're clear about the DCP, I'm sure. So I find that really unacceptable. It'll generate about a square metre of solar access into the room, which is right in the corner of the property, and that's evident in that photo.
Excuse me, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
That is your 3 minutes, Mr. Stevenson.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. Sorry. Okay. Can I ask something? This is a really significant thing for us. There are a lot of issues, a lot more than the issues I've just been listening to with other proposals. I'm really, frankly not happy, really upset, actually, with what's transpired here. I'm going to speak from the top of the heart. It's what's been proposed is not compliant with controls. It's really damaging to our amenity. There's been lack of response from the owner in terms of me raising issues with them. There are issues of view loss. There's the issues of the car access at the back. There's privacy issues. There's lack of compliance with BLZs. There's so many issues here. There are issues that are put on the documents that are not correct. For instance, on the top of the building, there's a 3.5 metre wide window that is just simply excluded from their drawings. So I'm saying, how can you, as the council or the panel, properly assess what's been provided? I find that the shadow diagrams should have been done as a solar access plan. They should have been able to determine exactly what works in terms of compliance across the full 4 metres of the facade. And therefore, we would be able to assess it. You could assess it, I could assess it, and I could feel comfortable that going forward, it's not a problem. So my suggestion was that, one, that whether the panel would come to our site to understand our full amenity that we have and what we're going to lose, and that the applicant be asked to produce a solar access plane from which they can determine how much of our facade, our northeast facade, would be required to maintain the 2 hours of sun. It's a pretty simple exercise to do. I don't know why the council and the planners didn't request that. And I find that the assessment that's been done is really subjective. Whereas we have an opportunity to actually assess it on a numerical basis. You should be able to determine that you've got X square metres of facade that you're trying to maintain that 2 hours. And that whatever's required, you know, that creates the envelope and then you design accordingly. You know, whether it's setbacks, changes in floor to floor height, changes in ceiling height. There's many, many things that can be done to solve that problem. And when I look at this, there's this desperate need to get parking into the back of the car. Well, of the property, so it just jacks the building up. There's a lot of issues. It's very, they're all intermingled, as you can imagine.
Mr. Stevenson,
I know I've gone over. I apologise for that.
You've made your points.
Yeah.
I have to say that during this time of COVID,
yeah,
the panel is not expected to go on to private property.
Yes, I have appreciated that. Thank you.
So your invitation to go onto your place is appreciated, but the panel won't be doing that.
I mean, sorry to interrupt, but we could do a little Zoom thing and show you. It's all about the quality of the space, quality of the light, quality of the sun. It's something that I think is difficult for us to understand. Anyway.
Well, you've raised a number of things which we will no doubt take on board.
Okay, thank you.
Now we should hear from Lynn Molloy. Is Lynn Molloy there, please?
You're on mute.
Hello, can you hear us?
Can you hear us?
Yes, good, thank you.
Okay, my name's Lynn Molloy. I'm the applicant on behalf of my client, and I did the design work for the house. I sent a one-page submission just addressing the council's report, and there's three items that we wanted to raise. The first one is the roller door at the rear. We'd like that to be allowed to stay. The second item is the 150 set down that the council's asked us. We'd like that to be deleted so that we can allow disabled access from the living space to the terrace. And the third item is the roof and the skillion roof. The council have suggested that we change it to a skillion and get rid of the clear story. And we're happy to agree with that, but we would like a skylight and added to that. As far as the roller door at the rear is concerned, we have supplied additional information at the request for information that the council sent through earlier in the year, and we have complied with all of the requirements that the council has asked for in that regard. And we can't understand why the council is declining that after we had two pre-DA meetings where in both instances the council agreed that was possible. My client's going to speak now, Mr. Davies, and I'll be here to answer any questions that the panel have.
Perhaps, Chair, could I ask a question of the designer?
Yes, please.
Yes, I would just like you to respond to what you heard from Mr. Stevenson in terms of the solar access.
Okay, you can see the window that Mr. Stevenson is referring to is the window to the side of him, and as you can see, it is covered with a dense planting, so the solar access is not there anyway. But are you speaking? I can't hear you.
Please proceed.
Sorry. The shadow diagrams, the council have agreed that they comply and that the solar access is available. The side terrace has been set back so that there is as much solar access as possible. But in order to just get a living room space in that building, to go back any further would just make it unlivable, because the council has absolutely insisted that we don't touch the original house. The row of terraces, and this is a freestanding house with a very low pitched roof. It has no opportunity to put an attic in the roof. That just isn't the height. And the council in the pre-DA meetings have insisted that we don't touch the original roof. So everything, to turn this into a livable space, everything has to be planted on the back. If we have to go move the whole extension back to get even more solar access to number 33, it creates a space where at the moment there's only room for a small sofa. We wouldn't even have room for that. It's a juggling act that we've tried to comply with, and the solar access does comply. The council have agreed that it complies.
Any other questions, panel?
Not from me, no.
I'm the owner here next to Lynn. Am I allowed to speak?
Sorry, yeah, I've unmuted. Sorry. Just of the applicant's architect, in relation to the retention of the roller door at the rear of the property, the report recommends that that be deleted and that parking isn't possible there. So could you just clarify why there is need for a roller door to be retained?
Well, we had two pre-DA meetings. The first proposal was for a garage. The council said, no, we don't recommend you having a garage, but you can, they said, yes, parking would be considered. In the second pre-DA meeting, they sent a whole page of conditions for us to comply with in order to have the parking. So we were totally, yes, on page, if you have a look at page 262 and 265 of the council's report, they made it clear that we would be allowed to have parking, and that's what we've allowed. We've tried to just provide a parking space so that in the future, if we had an electric car, they can pull in off of the laneway so a car can be charged. The client also has a couple of motorbikes that would be good to be able to get off the street. And we had no, it's only on this DA condition that the council have come back and said, no, you're not allowed to have the roller door and you're not allowed to have parking. And we don't understand that, because there's certainly been led to believe that we would be able to.
Okay, thank you.
And the other thing I'd like to add is this property is a freestanding property. It's not part of the terraces and it has side access. So the width of the property is much wider than the adjoining terraces. And that's why there is the compliant drawings for the parking. It does comply because there is enough width there to get the car in and out of the back.
I think it's more a turning circle from the laneway rather than the site, the width of the site. But thank you for that.
Yep.
Any other questions by the panel? No. All right. Well, thank you for that. And as I said to Mr. Stevenson, we'll take on board everything that's been said and subject to our decision in due course.
Sorry, I'm the owner of 35 Waterview Street. Am I allowed to say?
No, we've heard you for about 5 minutes, not 3 minutes, Mr. Stevenson, and you.
This is Mr. Davies. I'm the owner of 35 Waterview Street. I did put an application in to speak.
The owner of the subject site.
Yes, correct.
Well, I'll allow you to speak. We don't have anything in writing from you, but you have 3 minutes.
Right, thank you very much.
For the record, your name and address, please.
Yes, my name's Hugh Lloyd Davies, and I'm at 54 Mary Street, Huntersfield.
Yes.
I previously lived at Wells Street with my wife and four kids. Our kids went to Birchgrove Kindergarten and Balmain High School. They are baptised in Campbell Street by Andrew Seuss up the road. So we lived there until 95 when we moved, because the terrace was too small. I didn't go around getting support from the neighbours, as I had a heart attack last year, and I didn't want to increase any stress. So basically, I haven't gone around requesting support. I've assumed that the council will look objectively at the submission and approve accordingly. We've been involved with this project now for nearly coming up to 3 years. And we've had two pre-DA two pre-DA meetings where there was no objection to the carport. We were provided with GIPA reports under the Freedom of Information where the garage was approved in principle. The submission that we've put in has been information provided by the civil engineer and the surveyor, and that was submitted with the DA on pages 262 to 265. Now, that includes all sweep paths, turning circles, parking diagrams and sections. So that is a fully compliant fully compliant for us to utilise that Jaeger Road. In regard to your comment regarding the roller doors, there's numerous doors on Caroline, on both Caroline Lane and Duncan Street. There's nothing unusual of the design of a roller door. At this junction, there's three double gates in Jaeger's Lane itself, and the fence next door basically looks like a panel lift door. It's FC sheeting with panels. So when we described fences, I said more as a panel lift section rather than a roller door. There are a number of large apartments in the area, one at the top of Waterview Street and then again one Caroline Street. Limited parking is being afforded. I can't actually understand why anyone in the street would object to a carport being provided, as there's limited parking now. All the properties from Duncan Street, 29 Waterview Street to 35 have high fences. They're actually over 3 metres. Our roller door is 2.6 metres and is adequate for our needs. The lane serves the community in a variety of ways, especially tradesmen carrying out their work to Waterview Street. Tradesmen are seen down in those in Jaeger Lane most days.
Excuse me, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
Okay, I'll just finish off. I just wanted to comment on the skylight. We understand there's a demolition order on Bob Stevens' place next door for the rear of 33 Waterview Street. So we do not understand why their objection or why their objections are acceptable from a non-compliant building.
All right. Thank you for that. As I said earlier, we will consider what's been put to us and publish our reasons and our decision in due course. So with that, we can move on to item 5.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, could I just clarify what Mr. Davies said? Something about a demolition order?
We don't understand that.
There's no demolition order on my property, so I'm not sure.
Mr. Stevenson, comment... we don't understand. It's not part of this application.
Oh, okay.
That's all we're concerned with.
Okay, no problems. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, appreciate it.
So, all right. Item number 5 is the proposed development at 20 Beatty Street, Balmain. I note that we have 5 objectors who wish to speak on this matter and 1 person for the applicant. I should advise that the protocol which governs these meetings allows up to 3 objectors to speak on any development and up to 3 speakers for the development. Of the 5 objectors who have registered to speak, has there been any agreement as to who the 3 will be? If not, I'll just call the first 3.
Mr. Chairperson, it's Vishal here. I'm the owner of the immediately neighbouring property. While there have been 5 that have registered to speak, only 4 are speaking. So if you could kindly give us the allowance for 4 people to address, that would be much appreciated.
All right. Then you may do that, provided you stay within your 3 minutes.
Absolutely.
Right. So do you wish to go first?
Yeah, sure.
All right. First, your name and address, please.
Sure. Vishal Chopra, 18B Beatty Street in Balmain. My property is basically immediately neighbouring the subject property on the western boundary. As per the one-page submission that I provided, there were a couple of key elements that I wanted to point out. Firstly, as far as the application is concerned, it grossly breaches all the relevant statutory controls. So the FSR that smaller lots receive is currently quite generous at 1:1. And we are not against the fact that, you know, development applications shouldn't breach the FSR at all. But the degree of variance matters. In this case, it is almost at 30% for the FSR, at 36% for the site coverage. While as far as landscaping is concerned, the provision provided is nil, and so is the proposed setback at nil. Now, the key concerns is basically the way they have gone about basically increasing the floor space ratio. This requires bulk excavation and demolition of the sandstone to basically create a lower underground garage, as lower underground living area, as well as a garage backing off the Bulger Lane. Now, the garage in itself, the heritage officer in the initial report recommended against the sandstone being demolished to build the garage. Even the Inner West Council in their own parking policy statement talk about, you know, urban planning and livability strategies that promote the public transport usage and encouraging alternative forms of transport. So, you know, having a garage as part of the property is not a prerequisite. The other thing was also the false and misleading direction provided in their response to council's concerns around nil landscaping areas, where they basically stated that the neighboring lots do not provide landscaping at the back of the property. That's completely inaccurate. Both 18A, 18B, 22, 24, and 26 BD Street have substantial landscaping, including a lot of properties actually having tree canopy cover as well. So their argument is the fact that, you know, because of the, I guess, the setting of the site and the gradient, that this is not possible, and the fact that the current property doesn't have any landscaping, so it's okay to continue with that precedence, which we categorically don't agree with. The other concern is the geotechnical report. Now, without a trial pit, you know, being dug to actually explore the foundation material, there are a lot of assumptions and caveats basically made, including a concerning one saying that our property is presumed to have a subfloor structure, so that shouldn't basically undermine you know, the structural integrity of our property. So the key thing is BD Street is a tight-knit and close community. And for us that have been here for quite some time, you know, we are invested in the community and the impacts basically to our neighborhood. So what we are concerned with is basically an isolationist approach by these neighbors who, you know, have not interacted with anyone in the community at all, or even tried to engage with us as far as, you know, the development application is concerned, despite the impact. Proposing a development application that grossly breaches all the relevant controls. You know, it makes a mockery of that. So the key things that we wanted to point out was, one was a site inspection would be important, just given the concerns basically raised, as well as scaling back the development to, you know, within 10-15% of the FSR, not a gross 30%. And also prior to the commencement of works, the dilapidation report is quite important, that it's carried out by a qualified structural engineer. And lastly, the proposed funds to be set aside, I believe, had been proposed at 2,200, which is grossly inadequate. We want that increased to a minimum of 10% of the construction budget. And mind you, the construction budget of 527, I think, is, to put it mildly, unbelievably optimistic. But even then, I think 10% of that, I think, would be adequate in that regard. So I think what we are concerned with is exceeding the FSR is one thing, but the bulk excavation in order to achieve that means is another. And as the other concerned neighbors will point out and delve into a bit more detail around the heritage concerns and, you know, the drainage of that particular property as well, that should paint a fuller picture for yourself. So some of the details in regards to the landscaping, we had actually provided photographic evidence in our initial submission to council, refuting the fact that, you know, when they said there was no landscaping provided. So our concern is over developing a site, just putting a big monolith there, and the fact that they've tried to use our property as an, you know, example is grossly disingenuous and misleading as well, because our property resides on a site that's twice the size of 20 BD Street. So trying to construct something similar is, yep, that was it, just in terms of key points. Thank you for your time, panel and chairperson.
Before you go, any questions by the panel?
No.
No.
A point to make to the speaker. The panel members have done an external site inspection. It's just at the moment with COVID, we're not able to go inside the building. So we're certainly familiar with the site, the neighbourhood. And I just wanted you to be aware of that.
Sure. Thank you.
Any other questions?
No.
No, thank you for that. Who wishes to go next?
I think I'd like to, because I'm on the other side of the proposal at number 22 Beattie Street, and my name's Stephanie. If that's okay, Mr. Chair.
And your number?
I own number 22 Beattie Street. Good. The other side of this, number 20, which is the proposer.
All right, proceed.
First concerns are the description of the lower ground floor and wording of most of the geotechnical report. It seems to me that the scope for the lower ground floor excavation is described as minor, but what I can see on the diagrams is that excavation is going to go beyond where that area under the house is, almost as close to the front boundary, which is right along the party wall. So that's a concern for me. The geotechnical report reveals there's a lot of uncertainty about the state of party wall footings and potential for damage during excavation. It also describes a high probability of mishaps, and the language of the report is full of warnings. Do I need to give examples, or has the committee got access to the geotech report?
No, you tell us what you
want to tell us. Just as an example, the geotech report says the proposed excavation undercutting the footings of the existing house and the western and eastern neighbouring houses is a potential hazard, hazard four. And impacts before retaining walls are in place are also a hazard and listed as possible. So it's, for me, it's a fairly alarming report in total. It describes the alterations as modest, which I've said I think is not quite true. And it's filled with language that minimises potential problems and talks up public benefit. But who is the public that's referred to? My house is also lumped in with all of the other terraces as heavily modified. I absolutely disagree with that. There's no way my terrace is heavily modified. Leaving that, I'll just say I can't locate anything in the reports about potential damage to the shared stairs that lead down to Bulga Lane from 20 and 22. They're steep old stairs and they're jointly owned. And if the retaining wall at number 20 is to be excavated, those stairs are not going to be unscathed. All of the terraces from 20 to 28 are timber framed, lath and plaster walls, weatherboard cladding, traditional timber roofs, a mix of timber and brick foundations. The only brick constructions in those terraces are the nib party walls from the front fence to the front door, and the walls around the fireplaces, which I understand have recently been removed from number 20, but it's, I don't know for sure.
Excuse me, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
That's your 3 minutes.
I do have more to say. I don't think I'll be all that long.
We do have submission.
Potential financial loss is of great concern to me.
You've mentioned that in your written submission, and which we have read.
Right, so I'm silenced.
That's all right. You put your concerns in writing, which we have.
Right. Well, can I just say something in summary to conclude?
All right, you can have another half a minute.
I'm not in principle opposed to somebody developing a house, but the absence of the owner's engagement with neighbours has been surprising and unhelpful considering the risks. Thank you.
All right. Now, who wishes to go next? Mr. Brown or Mr. Jensen?
Yes, I'm not Susan Sharp, I'm Ronald Brown. I live at number 26 Beattie Street, Balmain, which is two up from the subject site.
Yes.
And I concur with my neighbours' former remarks and their concerns about overdevelopment, which is seen as excessive with those major controls, the FSR, the permissible site coverage and the lack of landscaped open space, none of which comply. In fact, they all are exceeding or non-existent. The site is located within the Heritage Conservation Area, CO7, as you're well aware, no doubt, also part of the Balmain Valley Distinctive Neighbourhood. The property is part of a terrace group, approximately 1889, circa, that's the age of it. It is a fragile terrace, so it would be subject to some impacts if this major development went ahead. As Stephanie said previously, its construction is considered fragile. The heritage controls in the LEP and the DCP are quite extensive for this type of property. It's part of the existing heritage group, and it's seen as a contributory member of a contributory item to the heritage conservation area. Heritage controls recommend that only modest additions and discrete alterations are undertaken to the building. In this area, these controls have been largely ignored by the proposal. The addition of a lower ground floor garage, along with extensive demolition and alteration to interiors and rear courtyard, are all seen as excessive and exceeding the controls. Heritage controls recommend the removal of unsympathetic elements. So the only concession to this was the infill element on the front veranda that's proposed for replacement with a balcony. The heritage control C2, where a property is part of a group or row, replacement materials should regard the integrity of the group. The proposed large wall-to-wall windows and bifold doors to the rear elevation are predominantly glass. This is not sympathetic to the visual unity of the terrace group and its character, and is seen as intrusive to the row, to the terrace group, and also to the character of the item itself. Heritage Control C3 states must not include demolition of internal walls, including chimneys or the front two rooms of a dwelling. The proposed plans obviously propose to remove these elements at ground floor level, and there's no support proposed for the upper chimney, which is being retained in the roof structure. I don't see how this can be supported if this is seen as a demolition of internal significant items. The Heritage Control C10, desired future character controls for a distinctive neighbourhood, states high walls and garages are considered intrusive to the character of the neighbourhood. So the proposed demolition of the sandstone wall to Bolger Lane for the addition of the large garage with a metal door will detract from the historic wall form and fabric. This form is common to the terrace group's rear boundary, to which retains its masonry elements, timber fences, and shared access stairs without garages.
Excuse me, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
Is it? Can I just conclude? I believe it's a significant contributory item, number 20 Beattie Street, that is, shares the same architectural design materials character as the terrace group. Its boundary walls and fences can be seen from the public domain in Palmer Street and Bolger Lanes. Its cultural significance is dependent on retaining intact this unity of character, form, and materials. I think the conservation area as a whole would be diminished if this development was approved in its current form, and it should be re-examined and reduced in scale and size. Appreciate the extra time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Any questions by the panel?
No.
Mr. Hawke, any questions?
No.
Ms. Morrell, Ms. Day, no questions. Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Welcome.
Then there is room for one more speaker. Is it Mr. Jensen or Ms. Marseille? Who's there? Are there any other speakers for the local residents? If not, then we'll hear from...
Mr. Jensen is putting his hand up, but he's on mute.
I'm unmuted now, I believe, Chairman. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, Mr. Jensen.
Sorry, sir.
your name and address.
No trouble. Chairman, my name is Trevor Jensen. I own number 30 Beattie Street. I concur totally with the previous speakers, and I won't repeat. You've got my copy of my objection there. Our concern really is about the excessive exceedances in this case, but it's been very sad, the isolationist approach that's been taken by the applicants, and it really has disenfranchised the community down there. Beattie Street is a very tightly knit group, and while seemingly mundane, the cooperative spirit really is what makes the neighbourhood both desirable and livable. The real area here is that there's extensive excavation which will be associated with a non-habitable area, namely the garage. And I believe the DA application for the living space, we respect. But I believe that this matter could be dealt with quite simply had they spoken to us. And if the extensive excavation associated with the non-habitable area was to be deleted from the DA, the community would be relatively happy. There would always be some people that might still have some concerns, but that's the real area. Also, it's that we need a dilapidation report by a structural engineer, I believe, but also the compensation fund we see as really insufficient. There's going to be at least $500,000 worth of evacuation here, and 10% of that would be, I believe, would be more appropriate. I'm quite happy to answer any questions because my copy is there. They're the key points. And for the sake of just simply repeating what my colleagues have said, I concur with them. But only the one final point is there will be tremendous disruption. There are six garages and three parking areas in Bulger Lane, and they're going to virtually be locked off for up to a year. Now, that is a massive disruption which has not been discussed with any of the neighbours by the applicants, and that is incredibly disappointing. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. We appreciate that. And as you said, we have what you have put down in writing before us. Any questions by the panel?
No.
All right. Now, Mr. Stephen Griffiths.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Judge Lloyd, and panel members. I'm the nominated representative for the applicant, and I wanted to address the panel on one particular issue in the recommendation, which is otherwise acceptable to the applicant. I should just note that this application is before the panel today because of the variations to development standards, but those variations are supported by written requests, and they have been considered and deemed acceptable by the council officers as they are required to. I'm also happy to address any questions the panel has in relation to issues raised by the objectors, but if I could just deal with the one matter that I'm instructed to ask the panel to consider in its deliberations, and that is the condition recommended as condition number two. It requires that the side addition to the eastern side of the ground and first floor levels be set back 1 meter from the front wall of the existing terrace. What has been proposed is a 500 millimeter setback and a differentiation in materials and finishes so that the original corner of the terrace at the front can be still interpreted as is the intention of the condition. We say that the additional 500 millimeter setback will just create a dead space at that frontage, which if the panel members drove past today might have already missed. It's very fleeting and you can only see it when you stand directly in front of it. As soon as you step either side of that and the view becomes oblique, then you wouldn't be able to see that corner anyway. It will be screened by the physical elements of the balcony and of the adjoining property to the east. And so the application represents a significant win, in our opinion, in terms of heritage conservation and general streetscape, because the applicants have voluntarily agreed to reopen the front balcony at first floor level, and that will restore the original form of the terrace. So it's really just that setback at the front. It's unnecessary. It doesn't really have any heritage benefit, and it just creates an area that will become a bit of a maintenance issue if it's imposed. So just to confirm, my request of the panel is to resolve in accordance with the recommendation of the council officers, but to delete condition two of the recommended conditions.
When you say delete condition two,
yes,
would you be happy with the reference to 1 meter be changed to 500 millimeters?
Well, Mr. Chair, the plans actually show a 500 millimeter setback already. And so if that change was imposed, then it would basically be doing what the plans already show. I could take the panel members to page 333 of their agenda. And on that page are the ground and first floor level plans.
Yes.
And sort of in the bottom left-hand corner of the two plans that are shown on there, panel members will see a dimension of 500 millimeters from the front wall.
Yeah.
It's a bit small, so hopefully you've got a larger set of plans than I have. But what is being requested is that that 500 millimeter setback be replaced with a 1 meter setback. And that's what we say is unnecessary from a heritage perspective, because the 500 millimeter setback achieves the heritage intent to retain that corner of the original terrace building. And it resolves a potential maintenance issue that might arise if 1 meter setback is imposed. So to answer Mr. Chairman's question, if the condition said 500 millimeters instead of 1 meter, then I expect that my client would be happy with that because it would reflect what the plans show.
Any other questions by the panel?
Yes, I have one. Mr. Griffiths, can you comment on Mr. Jensen's comments regarding disruption to access to all the neighbours' garages during construction and excavation?
Yes, certainly. Thank you, Mr. Hawke, for the question. At this stage, there are no plans to block the lane. We saw that issue raised in the submissions, and it would be a matter of general process for the construction vehicles associated with the development to be managed accordingly. There are conditions recommended for the panel in terms of how that occurs, a construction management plan, and any request by the applicant to occupy the lane would be subject to an application under the Roads Act. And of course, council has the ability to refuse that at any stage if it were to block the lane. But just on that point about the laneway, the objector did mention that there are six other garages that would be hindered by any blockage of the laneway. And I just say that that points towards the character of the laneway being of service nature, and responds in effect to some of the other concerns about the garage being part of a proposal and the appropriateness of that.
Thank you, Mr. Griffiths.
From the panel, any more questions? Ms. Day or Ms. Morrell, no questions?
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to ask the questions for Mr. Griffiths to respond to some of the issues that he heard, the concerns of the objectors, in particular, the extent of excavation.
Yes.
And then what the geotechnical report also states.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Morrell. As I said, this matter is before the panel due to the extent of the breaches to development standards, but in terms of the floor space ratio standard, the additional floor space is limited to the ground floor level and the garage, which are generally, certainly in terms of the lower ground floor level, won't be visible or won't have any impact on adjoining properties once it's there.
I think the concern or the issue is not its contribution to FSR, but in terms of the integrity of the row of terraces.
Yes. Yeah.
And the need for the extent of excavation.
Well, there is a geotechnical report provided with the application which deals with the amount of excavation that's required. It quite reasonably raises risks that are associated with excavation, and that can be said for any development site where excavation is proposed. It's not necessarily limited to this one. Council has looked at the level of excavation in accordance with provisions of the LEP, which require council to do so as a jurisdictional matter prior to granting consent. And with reference to the geotechnical report reviewed by council officers who are more qualified than I to speak on those matters, they have deemed it to be satisfactory. Yes, the geotechnical report raises issues. It also raises matters which can be implemented on site to address those risks and those issues. And that's generally standard of a geotechnical report. The conditions that have been recommended to the panel include further geotechnical work to be done. They also recommend dilapidation reports to be undertaken pre and post construction works, and the applicant is more than happy to do all of that and sees it as a mere requirement to do so rather than voluntarily doing it. It's a requisite and it will be done. Other than that, I would only say that there is an existing wall at the rear of the site, and that was mentioned by some of the objectors, and that retains some land which would have been would have been fill. And I think the geotech report goes to this matter that the land level in the backyard of the subject site consists of a lot of fill, with the level being raised and leveled out to form the courtyard. And that's no different to other properties along the row, many of which have already had excavation undertaken to form their garages.
Thank you.
Any further questions by the panel?
Just one from me. If you could give me some feedback on your thoughts on condition 3, some of the objectors have raised concerns about the lack of security deposit for a project such as this, particularly given the objector who detailed some of the risks identified in the early geotech report. Just wondering what your thoughts are on that. $2,209 is not a great amount of money.
As I understand it, that security deposit relates to council land being damaged rather than private land, and it is worked out on a fairly standard basis. I know Mr. Amy is on the line, maybe he can assist me with this, but if the panel felt that this particular application above others had the opportunity to cause further damage to public land, then subject to it being a reasonable sum, it is a deposit, and so I wouldn't necessarily say that it's a deal breaker for the applicant in terms of accepting something on those lines.
Yeah, just another question in relation to condition 13, which is on page 320 of the agenda. Yes. I can't see a reference to a post-construction dilapidation report being required, and perhaps Martin could point us to that. You say that there is a pre- and a post-dilapidation report, but I can only see pre-construction.
I hope that wasn't a slip of the tongue. I was of the understanding.
I mean, I think it would be fair to have absolutely essential to have a post-construction for adjacent properties. Also on page 320 is condition 16 that talks about dilapidation report for pre-development minor, which I can't understand why they consider that minor, but I'll speak to the panel perhaps in our deliberations later. But there is no reference to post-construction, and just your thoughts on that.
My thoughts are that it would be in everybody's interests to accept a condition which requires a post-construction dilapidation report, and I wouldn't have any objection to that. Okay. I think that probably didn't mean to mislead the panel on that issue, but it usually is standard that you have one pre and post. I wouldn't have any objection. And I think just on the issue of the heading of the condition, I think that's just a standard one that might not necessarily have any more sinister sort of issues behind it, other than it's a standard condition and it has a standard heading.
Yeah, no, we can resolve that post the meeting. Thank you.
Any other questions of Mr. Griffiths?
No.
All right. Well, we'll take all that on board and publish a decision in due course. And with that, we can now move on to item number 6. This is the proposed development in Ashfield at 1A Orchard Crescent, Ashfield, a residential flat building, 8 levels and 4 levels of basement parking, recommended for approval. We have a representative of the applicant here, Mr. Meachin. Is Mr. Meachin available?
I'm here. Hello, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, panel.
Are you happy with the recommendation and the proposed conditions?
Yes, absolutely.
Do the panel members have any questions?
No questions.
No? Well, then...
It's a massive improvement on the previous application.
That's good to hear.
Well, I concur in that remark. Well, you can assume that the formal decision will be to adopt the recommendation and the recommended conditions. Thank you very much for your patience.
Thank you very much for your time.
All right. That's item 6. So we now go to item 7, Audley Street, Petersham. And Mr. Grounds wishes to address us on that. Do we have Mr. Grounds?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jamie Grounds. I'm the architect for this proposal. I'm speaking on behalf of the applicant, Linetrap, in support of the proposal. We welcome that Council have recommended the DA for approval and also note there were no objections to this DA. Basically, what this DA is for converting the top 4 one-bedroom apartments into 2-bedroom units, and it adds another story to the building. Having read the recommended conditions of consent, I'd just like to suggest some changes to clarify some of the conditions, basically to avoid any issues later down the track that we have with obtaining a construction certificate, and also for help reduce issues that we may have later down the track. The first one's to do with the air conditioning systems, which says on the condition number 11, it states that where units or dwellings are provided with separate individual air conditioning systems, these must be located so that they are not visible from the street, and I agree with that. However, we do have a rear lane, and we do have some existing air conditioning units on the back wall that are visible from the rear lane, and so I'd just like that condition to be altered to say that these air conditioning units must be located so they're not visible from Audley Street. The second one is the number 15, is the verification of levels and location. That condition states prior to the pouring of the ground floor slab or a damp floor slab. We're not pouring a ground floor slab, we're pouring a third floor slab. The ground floor slab's been there for 20 years and we're not touching it, apart from putting a hydrant a booster at the front. So I think that needs to be changed to say the prior to the pouring of the third floor slab, and probably delete at or at damp floor level. The third one I'd like to mention is number 27, which is a bulky waste storage area, residential. That condition states, prior to the issue of construction certificate, the certifying authority must be provided with amended plans demonstrating that the bulky waste storage area must meet the floor area requirements as per Marrickville Council's DCP 2011 have a minimum doorway of 1200 wide to accommodate large items. Look, because we have an existing building and we have a limited, and we've got an existing basement, there's really limited area to put a, you know, a bulky waste storage area in that basement. We have allowed for some storage cages. We've allowed four storage cages of about 6 cubic meters for the top four apartments, which we think would suffice. So I really would like it if that condition was deleted, because we are limited on area in the basement. Condition number 28 states commercial additional storage space. Prior to the issue of construction certificate, the certifying authority must be provided with amended plans demonstrating that additional space has been allocated on site for the storage of reusable items such as crates, pallets and or compaction equipment.
Sorry, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
Okay, but we're not touching the commercial area. I mean, that's been operating like that for 20 years. There's no need for it. We'd like that condition deleted if possible. And the only other one is the alignment levels, which there's about four conditions pertaining to the rear driveway and the provision of a heavy duty crossing. That's condition 30, 31, 42, 43. We're not touching the driveway. That driveway states, I'd be happy for that condition to be changed to basically state that in the event of the driveway being damaged during construction, that, you know, that those conditions would be implemented. But apart from that, it's asking for heavy duty crossing. We've only got cars parking on this site. We're not parking trucks here. And I can't really see why we have to go and replace all that driveway, which is basically what would happen when you start mucking around with the crossing.
Mr. Grant, can you just tell us again what those numbers were of those four?
Yes, that was condition number 30, alignment levels, rear lane.
Yeah.
It was condition number 31, public domain works. It was condition number 42, parking sign-off, and condition number 43, public domain works.
Thank you. Can I just say, Mr. Browns, yeah, that we have got a copy of your submission.
Oh, you do? Okay, thank you.
There was also an additional condition 51. You didn't mention that just then.
Oh, that's right. Actually, thanks for reminding me. That's the turntable. We already have an existing turntable in the basement. If we can just get that condition altered as well to say that the existing turntable mechanical device for rotating vehicles must be maintained in operable state at all times, rather than sort of mentioning that we have to install one, because there's already one in place.
Okay, and that turntable provides for a V99 vehicle.
Yes, we looked at that, and yep. And we looked at the wheel axle dimensions, and I believe that turntable. Look, I designed this building 20 years ago, and I just did some measurements on it then, and I believe that turntable can deal with that, but. If it's a V99, we normally work with a V85 vehicle, which is a little bit smaller, but I probably have that checked, actually, and just see.
Okay.
But like, this building was approved 20 years ago with that turntable in it, so I'm assuming it'd be it's still okay.
Okay. Well, you're still referring to the existing, so okay, that's fine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anything else from the panel?
Just in relation to on page 459, the bicycle space provision in relation to the Marrickville DCP, four spaces are required and two are proposed. I'm just wondering if there's any possibility anywhere in the building for an additional two.
Yes, I can. I can. I can put two next to the. We have to put a new fire pump enclosure adjacent to the must be the western side boundary at the front on the driveway. Okay. I can possibly get two sitting in next to that. That'd be external. Or apart from that, I could also put them at the rear on our basement plan. You'll see there's a fire stair that runs out in the northern corner. We could possibly get two bicycle spaces there.
And they would be internal?
And they'd be inside, that's correct.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just thinking we might leave the actual location to you, but perhaps specify that it be internal. That they're just better, easier to use and so on.
I've got no problem with that condition. I'll get that to work.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else, panel?
No, thanks.
All right. Thank you for that, Mr. Grounds.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Now, item number 8 is the proposed Torrens Title subdivision at 27 Percy Street, Roselle. And we have two people who wish to speak on that. Is Monique Williams there, please?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
You have the floor. Please proceed.
Okay, I'm a first timer, so please bear with me. I'm at number 21 Red Lion Street. My property is behind this particular subdivision. Just a couple of things we wanted to raise, and I won't take long. The number of the architectural diagrams that have been provided unfortunately seem to have an incorrect position, like location positioning. So each diagram, one points to west, one points to north in all different directions. And this for us seems to have an impact on the shading that it's providing the shading diagrams. So we have no assurances that the shading diagrams are in fact accurate and that the shading diagrams themselves don't actually take into consideration daylight savings or the latter part of the day because they show the afternoon sun in the wrong direction. Unfortunately, we feel that that would actually impact our property later in the day. We get full afternoon sun. The second part of the issue we have is the second story dwelling. The second floor at the back of the property looks directly into our living room. Whilst we do have some trees and some greenery, we don't feel as though we have that protected. And that is the same also for number 19 Red Lion Street, who is more so impacted by that than we are. So that's the privacy issue. The last
Do you understand that we are only considering an application for a Torrens Title subdivision? No buildings. That's all we are concerned with here.
Okay, because in the subdivision documents that we received, we had the buildings and the proposed for buildings attached.
That is not before us. We are only concerned with an application for a subdivision. That is
okay. So I'll respond to that then. In the subdivision proposal, it doesn't allow for current parking on the number 27 that's being split into two. So one property at the moment, as it's one whole property, has sufficient room for parking in the proposed subdivision. It's now removing the parking that currently exists. It's already a heavily congested area and there already is a parking issue and COVID has only contributed to that. So we'll raise that issue
all right.
In relation to the subdivision.
Anything else?
No, but I guess I'm just a bit confused about why we've got building proposal DAs attributed to this subdivision that aren't being discussed and when that will be discussed.
No, we are not discussing any proposed building. We are only discussing the subdivision of the land into two Torrens Title lots. That's all we have before us.
Okay, thank you. That's it from me.
Well, before you go, panel, any questions? No?
No. Well, I was just looking at the previous applications and there was one approved quite recently in September for first floor additions. And that's the objector might be confusing it with that application.
Yeah, well, we did raise a concern and had no response. We've raised that twice. So I don't know how that got approved.
All right. So the next speaker is Martin Williams.
No, Martin's my husband. So I'm speaking on our behalf. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is anyone here on behalf of the applicant? No. All right. Well, then there be no applicant present, we will simply pass over that matter. So I take it, Ms. Williams, that you have no objection to the mere subdivision of the land into two.
Well, I guess we do from the fact that it's heavily congested and the two blocks behind it are rather small and under the 200 square metre provision. Again, that relates to the other matter. But we do in the fact that the provision then allows for additional buildings to be placed on that third subdivision, which creates a heavily congested environment behind our house,
yes.
Which would potentially obstruct our views. And we haven't seen any development plans for that just yet, but the fact that parking's not included, we don't necessarily agree with the subdivision.
All right. Thank you for that.
Okay.
All right. Well, there be no other speakers. We can now move on to item number 9. This is the proposed development, 17 Crescent Street, Haberfield. And we have Pamela Garrett who wishes to speak. Is Pamela Garrett here, please? No Pamela Garrett? All right. Well, if she's not here, we'll skip over that one and move to item number 10. This is the proposed garage at the rear of number 26 Oxford Street, Newtown. And Mr. Hebron is for the applicant.
Yeah, thanks, Chair.
All right, you have the floor.
Okay, thank you. I'll be a lot quicker than the previous applicants. This is fairly straightforward, and I'm really at a bit of a loss to understand the council's position. So, I'll just say a few words, and then perhaps if I can answer any questions the panel has, rather than spending time addressing things that may not be issues. So, this isn't. We bought a convent that had a lot of TLC, had people with campfires in it, and fixed it up. It's now a home for our three boys. We're applying for a garage out the back. There's a detailed heritage impact statement that by the same heritage architects that managed the first renovation that shows that it aligns with the heritage values, that it doesn't obstruct the view, that the streetscape's fine, that it gets cars off the road, that it supports the ongoing maintenance and preservation of the house because, at the moment I have tools and workbenches around just lying around, and it's, not only prevents us from using areas, it's actively damaging the house. So receiving the council's advice that it wasn't approved was a bit of a shock, particularly because the council had said that the application was to demolish a shed as well, and there's no shed being demolished. The council also said things like the neighbourhood amenity would be reduced by us removing a car off the street, which I've never heard of before and I struggle to understand. There was a statement that the garden would be removed, and we're removing one tree, which is one of the ones we planted in 2016. It's just based on a whole bunch of misunderstandings, I think, and I'm struggling to see any reason, particularly in the absence of any objections. We've spoken to the neighbours, spoken to the school. The school actively supports it because it'll stop balls coming in as often as they do and us returning them. I'm a bit of a loss. We have, there was a statement in the council's comments that it's not in the public interest. There's no analysis, no reasoning. There's a lot of reasoning in our heritage architect statement. I'm really in the hands of the panel. If you've got any concerns, I'm not sure what to address or what the concerns are.
All right. Well, I'll give the panel the opportunity to ask you questions. Panel, any questions for Mr. Hebron? No from Ms. Day?
Mr. Hebron, from the report, you'll understand that the council's heritage advisor does not concur with your advice.
Yeah.
Have you, that's something I would like to hear a little more about, if you've got words around that.
Sure. I spoke to the guy at one stage, and we've had the heritage architects and our other architect have had a number of meetings with council. Our heritage architect made some comments about the likelihood of it getting up. He said things like, you know, I won't go into that. I spoke to the fella and asked him how his feelings were, and he said, oh, look, we'd agree for a carport, but maybe not a garage. And I said, well, what's the actual difference? And the footprint's the same, the height's the same. And he said, oh, it's just the way we do things. So I explored it as far as I could with him. I had our heritage architect speak with him. None of us could get really a logical response. It was just that it wasn't going to happen. So I'm sorry, I can't shed a lot of light on it.
You've also intimated that it's going to be used as a workshop and not as a garage. Is that right?
Well, there's a spare bit, like a workbench. It's not a, you know, an office worker, not a handyman, but I do have an electric drill, and, you know, that's a, at the moment we have everything, my toolbox and saws and stuff on a table that is on one of the desks, on one of the decks, and it's, you know, just has dust everywhere and timber knocking around when we're trying to fix things. Because, I mean, I'm sure you're aware more than most, it's a house that was initially built in 1847, and it does require a fair bit of upkeep. There's always a TLC to be giving it.
Thank you.
Ms. Morell, any questions?
I think she's on mute.
You're on mute, Jan.
The council's heritage people indicated a carport would be acceptable. Is that right, Mr. Hebron?
Yeah, they did. But then, you know, part of the objection to having a garage is that we're taking out trees and demolishing a shed, so I'm lost. And a carport, when we're in discussions, a carport protects a vehicle to a certain extent, but to have things like tools there, they just get rusted. I've been at carport before, and there's, you know, really no point. And the idea is to have the dwelling house as a dwelling house, and to just remove all, you know, the workshoppy rats and mice into somewhere that's away from the dwelling house.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to understand if you, in consultation with council and the heritage advisor there, was it the roof they objected to, or that it wasn't transparent?
Well, I'd infer that it wasn't transparent. Our architect, Peter Rush, after I'd spoken to the heritage consultant and I couldn't really understand the issue, I asked him to give him a call, and he called and he just said, no, they're just not going to accept it. So there was no actual reason. The size and the bulk would be identical. So, and there's nothing at that level that would be blocked at all from the view. And we're talking, I'm not sure if you had a chance to have a look at the diagrams, but the main street is Oxford Street, which is the main entry and the front of the house. And we're talking about the rear of the house. So the only view that would be possible is coming up from Fitzroy Lane, and from that perspective you'd see the same whether there was a carport there or a garage, because we've expressly asked Peter to keep it as low as possible so that the house is shown off. You know, we love the place.
It's just that I noticed on the plans we've got a 3.3 high structure with the rear. And for a garage, you wouldn't need that height.
Well, there's nothing else going in there. So.
No, I'm just saying, I just was wondering why it was 3.3.
I don't know. That could even be a misprint on the diagram, but.
No, it's an architectural plan. I don't think it's a misprint.
You'd hope not. Otherwise, I'm going to be asking for some money back.
No, that's okay. All right. Okay. And it's got a curved roof. And I was just trying to understand whether they were objecting to the curved roof not being perhaps respecting the heritage. Anyway, that's okay. That's all. Thank you.
I think also in addition to the curve, the roof planter and emphasising the garage structure is perhaps something council wouldn't be particularly in favour of, because in this instance, with such a magnificent building on the site, less is more.
Oh, we'd be happy to take the planter off. That was it wasn't part of our intention, actually. That was suggested by our heritage architect in order to soften the impact. So I guess this is one of those things where reasonable minds may differ. But
is there any particular reason why you went for a curved roof?
The architect thought it'd be less intrusive. No, I mean, we were just in his hands, honestly. We wanted to get a car off the street and the tools off the deck and left it in Peter's hands.
Do you currently put your car off the street in the parking spot?
Occasionally, you can get it in there, but it's a tight squeeze. So at the moment, more often than not, it's on the street.
Thank you.
So the purpose of this application was to enlarge it to be able to have a car off the street.
So you can back it in. Yeah, it takes, well, it's probably a comment on my driving, but it takes two people to get it in there because you've got to do a few point turns.
You need to move to Balmain.
Too soon.
We can give you the narrow streets.
Wilberforce.
All right. Any other questions by the panel?
No, thank you.
No, no. All right. Well, we'll have to take all that on board. Thank you very much, Mr. Hebron. We'll consider what you've said, and as with the other matters, publish our decision in due course.
Okay. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. So that being the final item, we can now conclude the public meeting.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. This is T speaking. We've got Pam Garrett in the meeting now.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Good. Item number 9.
My sincere apologies. I got held up and I just couldn't log on before, so I apologise to the panel for that.
Right. We're back to item nine. Crescent Street, Enfield. Okay.
Yes, I'm sorry. I was wondering what was going on with the Fitzroy crossings and things. Anyway, look, I have to admit I haven't had an opportunity, as I'd hoped, to properly review the plans, but I just wanted the assurance from the committee of a couple of things in respect of the development. One was the height of the garage in terms of, I know it's been shifted to the other side of the property because I spoke to somebody at council who was very helpful about that. I just wanted to make sure what that height of that garage was, and also what the end agreement was in terms of screening of the back verandas and the bottom of the house. I had suggested in my submission that there would be transparent screens put up to keep noise and privacy secure, and also the length that the house comes out from compared to the rest of the houses in the street. And I do apologise for being so late. That's not usual, but I just wanted reassurance. And unfortunately, as I said, it's my bad. I haven't been able to access where the plans were. It's really just to request the question. I had seen the previous lot of plans.
All right. Well, the garage is shown as being on the opposite corner to your house. So it's looking out the back. It's not on the left-hand side. It's on the right-hand side of the subject property. And the plans show that it is largely below ground, the roof of which appears to be marginally above ground level, but only marginally so. And looking at the plans, the extension appears to extend again a couple of metres beyond the rear of your house. And a privacy screen on the side that faces your property. You would prefer that privacy screen to be translucent or something, do you?
Transparent, so not just so opaque, so you can't see through it, because that just affords me and the neighbour as well that privacy.
Well, you won't be able to see it. You won't be able to see through it. It's a privacy screen with louvers angled so that there'll be no overlooking.
And is that on their house or on?
On their house, yes.
If it's also, it's a noise barrier, because it's actually noise carriers very considerably in that, you know, the house is actually quite close together. And so I was hoping that we would have something that would be also a noise barrier. As soon as people have a barbecue or friends over or whatever, and that's where we all live out the back of our houses, it's very, very noisy. It's only, you know, it's less than a metre from my house to the boundary, and then it's sort of a metre to there, you know, where that veranda would be. So we're 4 metres away. So we're almost in one another's houses if the noise is not mitigated.
All right. I'll ask the panel if they've got any questions.
No questions, thank you.
No questions from me.
And Ms. Day?
No, that's fine. I think it appears on the cross-section of the east that above the ground, looking from your house towards Dobroyd Lane, the garage protrudes out about 1.7 metres above ground. Did that answer a question? Sorry,
that's very helpful. Thank you, because I couldn't see that on the previous
plan. DA31.
Yes. All right. Anything else?
Just in terms of those. So, I mean, I would really like to see that privacy, that as a hard on those verandas as a hard, something, because it really does make a difference in terms of the noise. The trees is the other issue, I guess, in terms of how it all works, and I assume that if it's going out to that same extent it was, then those trees along that boundary will be removed. Unhappy about, by the way. They're not very high value trees, but I just wanted to know what it is.
I think some trees retained along that boundary, at least one.
Yes.
T5 and T4.
Is that the cheese tree?
I'm not quite sure.
Thank you.
Panel, I'm the architect. I was just texting with the owner who can't tune in. I haven't registered to speak, so I apologise for the formality. Would it be helpful if we made that screen solid?
The neighbour seems to think it would. Yes.
Right. Okay. Well, that's possible.
Yes, the neighbour is concerned not only about overlooking, but also concerned to have a sound barrier, which suggests that she would prefer a solid screen. Is that agreeable to you?
Yeah, I think so. That should be fine. We might have to extend it to the lower level to make it work structurally and architecturally, but that should be fine. Yeah, that's fine.
Really?
Can I just say, Chair, in a normal residential situation, we don't require acoustic fencing. You do if you have a kindergarten next door to you, but if it's just another house, that's what suburbia is about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I could argue, though, that this is a change in my amenity, and I think that's the thing that I'm concerned about. And also, it's a whole lot of things in terms of those solid screens. It's about barbecue smoke and noise, if people smoke, if there's, you know, there's a whole lot of things that are actually improved. And, you know, I don't actually think it's a bad thing to have a solid screen anyway. You know, obviously it's up to the owner there what they would like to have. But I have a solid screen and it's actually very helpful in terms of winds and all sorts of other things, which is what I had put in my submission. But it really is an issue about, you know, the proximity, and that's a changed amenity as opposed to the current amenity that I have.
Could the architect give us his thoughts on, does this mean that there will be solid barriers on both sides of the proposal or just the side?
No, I think we would just do it on that side. If that's a genuine concern from the neighbour, we would do that. So we would, I think the way we'd do it is we'd have a wall coming up from the ground and then up to that top balcony. That would make the most sense.
Really,
visually, acoustically. Huh? Sorry, who was talking?
No, we're listening to you.
Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
But there was some interference.
So I suggest what we do is have a solid wall that extends from the ground level up to the balcony, and that will solve the acoustic issue, obviously, because it's a solid wall. And obviously that would solve any visual issue. My client probably wouldn't miss out on much sun because there's a big giant tree there, so that's not going to create a shadowing issue.
So, yes, it changes it from a balcony to a veranda, effectively, or just on that one side.
Yeah, but so that's the west side, I think, isn't it?
West side.
Western side, yes.
Yep.
That's the western side. Well, the applicant is agreeable to do that. So does that satisfy your concerns, Miss Garrett?
I would be extremely grateful for that, actually. It would be great. It will make a big difference. And, you know, I mean, I'm happy for people to do what they'd like to do in their house, but I just think, you know, it's really important we can live our own lives like that. And it's very hard if you've got noise that's coming through and barbecue smells and all the rest of it. And we're much happier together if we don't have that interference with one another's lives, I think.
All right. Well, then the panel will probably have to impose a condition requiring that the privacy screen on that side, on the western side, be replaced by a solid wall.
And that would be over two levels. Can we just confirm that that's over both levels?
Yep, that's fine with us.
Yes.
And can I just say that the condition will have to include the applicant agreed to. We would not want to see this as a precedent, that's all. But if the applicants agreed, that's fine.
All right. Well, the applicant says yes, that's agreed. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good. So now we can conclude the public meeting.
Mr. Chair, I'll let you know when we're in a closed session.
Thank you.
Can we just have